Someone's about to find out if there is oil under the Everglades. I'm David Brancaccio in New York with Britain's Prime Minister angling for a short extension to this month's deadline for Britain to leave the European Union. Listen to this warning from the EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, and I quote, "Everyone should now finalize all preparations for a no-deal scenario." Given that, let's hear what British officials will do if the UK left at the end of next week, just kind of floating in the North Atlantic. Keith Johnson is global geoeconomics correspondent at the magazine Foreign Policy.
Right now, you know, a no-deal Brexit is sort of the default option. And basically what that means is that Britain's going to have to all but start over again in establishing its trading relationships and, you know, trade agreements with all kinds of major economies.
British officials have been working on this, though. I mean, they have this notion of lowering to near zero British tariffs.
Yeah, well, there's this plan that came out last week, which is a 12-month tentative no-deal Brexit plan. The plan on a wide variety of goods reduces tariffs, you know, for imports into Britain. And the idea there is, of course, to, you know, keep prices from shooting up and keep consumers from rioting. They do maintain or even increase tariffs on a lot of key areas, though, the auto sector, for instance. You know, it's a little bit of liberalization, but there's going to be a lot of friction with Europe since there's a lot of, you know, big auto trade between Britain and the continent. So even this temporary 12-month roadmap that Britain has worked out hardly guarantees them a seamless transition to a post-Brexit world of trade.
No, what Britain really wants is a firm deal with the EU, but also it's quite interested in pursuing bilateral agreements with all sorts of places. I mean, you think of India, you think of the United States, Australia.
Well, that was actually one of the, you know, the original appeals, almost a siren song of Brexit was, listen, if we weren't trapped inside of this, you know, 28-nation customs union, we could go out and do these free trade agreements with major economies like the U.S. There's multiple problems with that, starting with the fact that, you know, since 1973, when Britain joined the European Union, you know, it's outsourced its trade negotiations to the European Union, which means there's not a whole lot of experienced trade negotiators in Britain since they haven't been responsible for their own affairs in that matter for a couple of generations. The other thing, there are a lot of contentious issues where neither side wants to give ground. For instance, the U.S. insists that any trade deal include full access for U.S. agricultural goods, and that, whether it's with Europe or with the U.K., is kind of a third rail. It's politically toxic, and it's almost a non-starter. So you basically have to try to square a circle of radically different objectives with a compressed time frame. It's a dire outlook.
Well, Great Britain is an island, but as they say, when it comes to trade, no man is an island. Keith Johnson is global geoeconomics correspondent at Foreign Policy magazine. Keith, thanks.
Thank you.
Islands, I suppose. Later today, U.S. central bankers will share their sense of the U.S. economy and very probably will leave interest rates alone. Expect the chair of the Fed, Jerome Powell, to say the word patient or patience a number of times. That's easy to decipher code for we're not as inclined as we once were to raise interest rates much more. Hanging on to every syllable, every nuance of tone and body language from that news conference later today will be our Wednesday markets guest, Susan Schmidt, who's head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors.
Well, the market is certainly expecting that. I don't think things are going to change very much, and we largely expect to see that word come up quite a bit, but that's what we'll be hearing today.
And it's a far cry from the posture of late last year when Federal Reserve officials were talking about further interest rate increases ahead. So can we rule out any more interest rate increases here in 2019?
Well, when it comes to the Fed, you can't rule anything out. They like to pride themselves on being independent, but the market is really split between whether we'll see no further rate hikes this year or whether we might see one.
All of this is dependent on the health of the world and the U.S. economy, and that is dependent on progress in the trade war and, like, what happens with Brexit.
Exactly right. So all of the Fed's actions really are dependent on what they're seeing in the U.S. economy and their projections for the U.S. economy going forward. And that is all dependent on investor sentiment. Right now, we are relatively calm about the U.S.-China trade negotiations, and Brexit continues to be a great unknown. And I think the U.S. markets have really tuned it out. And so they're ignoring that topic of conversation.
All right. We'll see what actually happens. We're here every day. Susan Schmidt at Aviva Investors. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The original denim blue jean maker Levi Strauss will return to the stock market tomorrow, 3 decades after it pulled its stock off the public markets and turned private. Levi's is hoping to raise about $500 million to invest in new product lines and freshen its image. Marketplace's Renata Sago has the story.
One thing you can expect more of from the newly public Levi Strauss & Company, a direct appeal to younger consumers. Jessica Ramirez is with the research firm Jane Halley & Associates.
They've been trying to stay abreast of millennial trends. And like most recently, they've been working more with streetwear brands that kind of work within their same realms.
An example of that, Levi's sells a collection that includes graphic t-shirts and cuffed skinny jeans. Levi's has also been trying to skew young by adding hemp to its garments and establishing a presence at the Coachella Music Festival. Marshall Cohen with the NPD Group says the IPO will also help Levi's build up its online direct-to-consumer sales in order to bring more options to market faster.
The younger consumer today, they want products that fit them better, relate to them better, that they can showcase. They don't want to just be able to go into a store and buy the same thing as everybody else.
Levi Strauss & Company will be listed on the New York Stock Exchange with the symbol Levi. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
Exploratory oil drilling is about to begin in the Florida Everglades. Last month, after years of legal battles, a Miami-based company won the right to do initial drilling in a protected wetland. A Florida appeals court ordered the state to issue a permit for one deep test hole. The Florida Department of Environmental Protection refused and sought a new hearing, but in the last 24 hours, a court said, no new hearing, get on with it. From the Florida Everglades, Maria Bacalopoulou reports.
At the Everglades Holiday Park, tourists leave the dock on airboat rides. 6 miles west, 20,000 acres of wetlands are at the center of a heated legal battle between the state and the mineral rights owner, Cantor Real Estate LLC. Broward County Commissioner Beam Furr opposes the project.
That's where we get our drinking water from. We're just downstream from there. That's why we're trying to protect it so vociferously.
The exploratory well would go more than 11,000 feet below the surface, drilling right through the Biscayne Aquifer, made of porous limestone.
To think that there would be no possibility of any leakage at all is implausible.
The aquifer supplies water for millions in southeast Florida. Matthew Schwartz of the South Florida Wildlands Association says the drilling process also poses other problems.
You've got the drilling rig, you've got the diesel generators, you've got water wells to supply water to make the drilling fluids, you've got trucks delivering materials. It's a major industrial operation.
In its court filings, Cantor said the site could yield anywhere from 180,000 to 10 million barrels of crude oil. In a written statement following the court action this week, John Cantor, president of Cantor Real Estate that is seeking to drill, said the company has been validated once again and is happy to be moving forward. David Mica, executive director of the Florida Petroleum Council, says oil drilling is low risk.
In many cases, that area is very environmentally sensitive, but with modern regulation and modern engineering technologies, the ability to reach those resources is greatly, greatly improved, in fact, safer than any time in the history of man.
In its ruling, the Florida Appeals Court called the drilling area environmentally degraded and said it is isolated enough from the public water supply to make drilling safe. In the Florida Everglades, I'm Maria Bacalopoulou for Marketplace.
And the CEO of Volkswagen of Germany is struggling to keep his job after he used a play on words evoking a notorious Nazi phrase. At a VW management meeting last week, Herbert Diess said pre-tax profits will set you free, EBIT macht frei, which sounds quite a lot like Arbeit macht frei, the terrible work will set you free slogan atop the gates at the Auschwitz concentration camp, Deese has apologized. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.